Hi, welcome to Holden Village. Today in the fabulous fireside room, today's speaker is Anne Wood, and she will be speaking on Homosexuality 101. So let's listen in on Anne Wood.
And we were not near her. She was on the East Coast. We were out on the West Coast. I wanted to be to meet more gays and lesbians and get acquainted with them as people openly. And we discovered Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays, short term PFLAG. And it's an organization, a nationwide, in fact, it's all over the world now, of a support group, an information group. It's first support for families and friends. It is second an educational information group, and it is third, it works for civil rights and justice. Simple justice, shall we say, for gays and lesbians. This is something else coming out of church group. Through them, immediately we met other parents, other family members, and loads and loads and loads of gay men and lesbians who were out to the people in the group, to each other, and suddenly we were part of the gay community in Spokane. We became totally part of it, going to coalition meetings and everything else. It was a really exciting and rewarding experience. And that was just the beginning of really heavy study for me on what homosexuality is. I don't understand it. Who does? But I now know a lot about it and a lot about gay and lesbian people. And I am happy to share that information because I find when we talk to groups of any size, church groups, secular groups of any sort, the ignorance level is way up there. And it starts with words, just words that are bandied around in the press, in movies, in anything. So I'm going to begin by introducing you. You probably know them, most of you, but if you don't, let's talk about them anyway. And I've got them up here. In the first place, we talk about sexual orientation, and to me it's like a magnetism. It's very strong, it's a pull. We all have it somehow or other. It's in us. I am totally, totally heterosexual. I can't even imagine the homosexual pull. However, because I don't know why I am how I am, I understand they don't know why they are how they are. My daughter is. So we have, this is what we are here. It's the male and the female attracted to each other. That is what we call normal. But it is just one stage, one variation of normality. Up here, I've used the male symbol and the female symbol. We have two males attracted to each other and two females attracted to each other. This is the orientation. There's also, here's your heterosexual. What most people are, the homosexual is attracted to the same gender. The bisexual, and we're learning more and more about bisexuals and admitting that we know more and more, is attracted alternately or sometimes in various parts of their lives to either the opposite sex or the same sex. Now this is important to know. Basically, all people have the same normal male or female bodies. When you're talking about homosexuals or bisexuals, we're talking about normal male or female bodies. This is why you say, how can a lesbian possibly have a baby? Well, of course you can have a baby. Or how can a gay man possibly father a baby? Well, of course he can, because he has a normal male body. They are only different in their orientation, their attraction. I don't know if any of you can see these words, but it says orientation, attraction, magnetism, bonding, love. And really wrote down at the bottom, I put sexual appeal, because that may or may not be one of the early stages. If you know, if you've gone through kids growing up and you have some teenagers with a really strong sex drive for somebody else, and they just, the whole world revolves around it, you know that that is not the force for a good marriage. It's something else. And really, with gays, it may be one of the first things that happen, but the ones that are bonded for life generally are friends, they do things together, and they have very, very normal relationships together. And sex is just part of it. I put the pink triangle on here. I think you probably all know what the pink triangle is. I have a little, I don't have very many copies of it, a little handout about the pink triangle. You ought to pick it up. Came from, the designation came from Hitler, Nazi. They put a pink triangle. The Jews had yellow stars sewed on them, and homosexuals had a pink triangle sewed on them. And they also went to the ovens along with the Jews. And if you go to the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., you will see this. There's a section on homosexuals. The term gay, it began years ago. Some people say it came from a French word. I don't know. I think in some interpretations are that they're so put down and so disgraced that the word makes them feel better. I don't know. Now it's just a word. And I use it almost exclusively when I can, because I don't like putting sex into everything. Homosexual. They don't go around. I don't go around calling myself a heterosexual. So why should we do that to somebody who is a little different? Now here I have, and I do have a bunch of copies of this, and I would like to get them around to as many as, you want to help me here? People as they will go to. This is the Kinsey scale. Granted, it's pretty old. Kinsey's work was done a long time ago, but it turns out to be surprisingly interesting in what we know today. It still fits pretty well. We're not talking about percentages here. We're talking about each person within ourselves has a range of sexual orientation. Over here on the far left is exclusive heterosexual. On the far right, exclusively homosexual. In the 1-2 area in here, predominantly heterosexual. Incidental attraction or experience, young people often experience lots of different things, toward homosexuality. Over in this direction, 4 and 5 rather, predominantly homosexual, incidental heterosexual attraction or experience. In the middle is probably the bisexual, and these may be more influenced by social situations, pressure from family and church and so on, much more so than anyone over in this area.
Anne?
Yes. Yes.
I'm lost on the two triangles. If 6 is exclusively homosexual?
Yes.
Never mind. I was looking for pink.
Oh, no, this has nothing to do with the pink triangle. Okay, pink triangle.
There's the pink half and the white half.
No, I just happen to have a red pen. Sorry about that.
Okay.
No connection whatsoever.
Okay.
Where was I? Oh, I was going to... Oh, yes. Are there any questions about this now? You've got... A lot of you have one in your hand. You got some questions about it. Now I want to get some more words. I think we can come back and look at these anytime we want, but you have this. Let's look at some more words that people get all mixed up in. Now, what we've been dealing with are heterosexuals. People who love someone of the same sex or gender.
Homosexuals.
Are homosexuals. Mm-hmm. That's what we're talking about. Now, we're going to get some words that are not those, but people have them mixed in their minds. So I want you to learn these other words. One is a transvestite. If you take, all you people, you students, transvestite simply means cross-dresser. That's all it means. And how many women here are in pants? Well, we've just got a lot of cross-dressers in there. Women get away with cross-dressing all the time. In our particular culture, men don't. However, men sitting on a judge's bench, what are they wearing?
Robes.
Men up in the sanctuary of a church, what are they often wearing?
The Scotsman with their kilt.
Pardon?
The Scotsman with his kilt.
The Scotsman with his kilt, yes. But you get away from here. You get the Greek skirt, the Scotch kilt, but you also find a lot of other kinds of dress things. What do the Ku Klux Klan put on?
Robes.
Long robes, yes. In other words, men put on skirts when they want to, for various reasons. Ever seen the Shriners dressed up? I mean, it's just cross-dressing is a cultural thing. It's also fun. It's a little bit like acting, and it's fun. Now, most cross-dressers are heterosexual. Remember that. The female impersonators and entertainers you often see may or may not be gay. Some gay men and lesbians are cross-dressers, and they may be the entertainers. But most cross-dressers transvestites are heterosexual. Let me explain. Our telephone number is the one that gets hundreds of calls from people for help. And I have had a number of calls from transvestites asking me, where can I get clothes? Where can I meet other transvestites so when I dress up I can have fun? My wife is helping me get dressed or do my costumes, but I need something else. It's like dressing up for a clown show. It's fun, but there is a compulsion behind it. Okay. Questions about transvestite? Now we're going to hit some others. Remember, this is, except for this one little, some gay men and lesbians are cross-dressers, and they are generally called drag queens or something like that. Anyway, transsexual or transgender is totally different, but it's something that you read about in the Sunday supplement, and you ought to read about it more in general. It is when the physical body doesn't match the psyche that God gave you. I know, I've known her for years. She was in my husband's church, 13-year-old girl who knows she is a boy. And she's always known she was a boy. And when I knew her, she was dressed in little boy clothes and so on. And then we didn't see her for a long time. Her mother used to call me and tell me long stories about it. And it's now, what, 12, 15 years later, I got a call from him the other day. She has turned herself and her life into what her inside is. That's a transsexual. Probably most transsexuals that get treated are the other way around. They're males that have more wanting to, a sense that they are female. We don't quite know why this is, something to do with, well, we haven't any idea why this is. The word transgender is the fine point in here. Even the specialists don't know how to tell the difference. But a transsexual generally is not completely happy until they have changed their life into the opposite role and also had hormone treatments. First, a lot of therapy, then hormone treatments, then surgery to make them, their body be matched. The transgender generally doesn't care about the surgery. They just want to be able to live the other way. Now, I've driven a red line here. This is something totally different. But again, I'm running into cases of this where people actually have mixed male-female bodies. So,
How do you spell that?
Hermaphrodite, H-E-R-M-A-P-H-R-O-D-I-T-E. Meaning, the hermaphrodite in the biology thing has both the male and female within it and can fertilize its own eggs kind of thing in some insects and things.
Okay.
Not insects, whatever. Now the next thing I'm going to show you is something terribly different, and get it in your head that it's terribly different.
Excuse me, before
you
go on further.
Pardon?
Could I ask a question?
Yes.
Your definition of the transsexual and the hermaphrodite.
Oh, they're not the same.
They're not the same?
No.
The transsexual, does he or she, or is she or he or she born bisexual?
No, he or she is born with completely perfect male or female body.
Only
but
male.
The inside, the head says, I am not. And we do not understand this, but this is the mm-hmm. case.
Okay, but the hermaphrodite has...
Hermaphrodite actually may have no sex organs, or both sex organs, or may be totally male but have beautiful breasts and female everything else. And, I mean, all kinds of complications and mixtures. But they're not the same. I should probably not even have shown this. I've been talking to people working in Seattle on this field, and so I get interested in these various variations. Maybe I'm clouding the water by even introducing that.
Good.
Okay. What's that? Well, this is what so many people that are ignorant claim is what a homosexual is,
mm-hmm.
and it is absolutely not. It is pedophile is a child sex abuser, a child molester, a predator. He is nearly always a heterosexual, and it is nearly always, not always, but nearly always a male, and the victim may be boy or girl, regardless of the perpetrator. I just have to tell you this very, very strongly, and this is what you have to believe. We have talked to the places where they have child abuse, where all these things are turned in, and they do not have cases with homosexuals. Just, you know, one in several hundred may be homosexual. A great many pedophiles were abused as children themselves, but not all. And many, many people who have been abused as children do not turn, most people do not turn out to be pedophiles. So, I mean, that can't be given as a cause of it. Reports I've seen, scientific reports, indicate that there's a very undeveloped personality problem in a pedophile. They may be married and have several children, but their relationship with their wife, their sexuality, is very immature, and also they want power over them. And a child is a wonderful thing to have power over.
And
yes.
Is someone who's a pedophile, does that equate with incest?
Well, I don't know. This new report that's come out in the last few days about the enormous number of rape cases of children under 12 that are within the family. It's hard to say. I can't answer that. A regular pedophile who goes beyond his family. You see, incest, you've got a victim right in the family. You don't have the courage to go out beyond, generally. But someone who is a pedophile, there is no evidence that they can be controlled and changed. Is that helpful at all, any of that?
The yes. Most helpful among all of it for me is that almost all pedophiles are heterosexual. Because lies an enormous cultural naivety and misunderstanding.
Nearly all. There are some, rare child abusers who are women, but they're very rare. Yes.
That's true even if these pedophiles are heterosexual men, basically, but they also abuse boys. But they're still heterosexuals,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. It's a power thing. It's a sick sex thing with power. And it apparently isn't amenable to treatment. I don't know where I am. I'm taking a lot of time here.
6:38.
The other big thing that I wanted to talk about was growing up gay. I'll do one thing here. We don't know the cause of homosexuality. There's an enormous amount of research going on now by all kinds of people. But a lot of it is pointing to genetics. A lot of it is pointing to, physical changes in the brain and so on. One of the surveys has to do with asking people to do their family tree and see where they can put gays in their family tree. I'm going to send this around so you can all look at it. You don't go around asking every your aunts and uncles, are you gay or not? You can try, but you probably won't get very far. In some cases, we know because of obvious reasons and hearsay from their sisters and brothers and so on. And when you get down to our generation and our children's generation, where they're more open, we're finding a lot. Now, we want to pass this around. This is my family. In the very center are my husband and me, with red. and his family going off and my family going off, the black indicates, the black in squares indicate those are homosexuals. And there are lots in our family. Now, we don't know, there are probably scads more. If you have, as we have done in the last 10 or 15 years, talk about this subject openly among your relations, you're going to find the same thing. Because they are in all of our families. And I just suggest you try doing it. It's sort of fun. And well, it's nice, because what happens is that you not only learn this, but you open up the possibility of those gay people being able to relate to you. I was visiting a first cousin of my husband's in Holland. He's half Dutch. And we were staying with, you know, I was out in the kitchen helping with the dishes, and she said, "Well, what do you do with your time now that Charlie's retired?" And I said, "Well, we do a lot of work with gays and lesbians." And she practically dropped the dishpan, and I thought, "Oh." And she said, "Wait a minute." She walked to the phone, made a phone call, speaking in Dutch. I didn't know, just know what she was saying. And a few minutes later, in came her daughter and her daughter's partner. They're both school teachers in Holland, and they came to Spokane, visited us. They're just a lovely young couple of women. And they've been together now, heavens, it must be 12, 15 years. But you see, I never would have known that if I hadn't been open. So that's fun to do. My big concern, one of my big concerns now, is growing up gay. Any gay person in this room or anywhere probably went through a lot of pain growing up, depending upon how soon they recognized their own orientation and how they accepted it and faced with it. I have a statement from my daughter that she wrote, that when she was in grade school, she was having lunch in the lunchroom, and the little milk cartons were sitting on the table. And around the top, the little rim, it said, "Homo milk, homo milk, homo milk," all around the top. And she was sitting there probably, I don't know, fifth grade or something, maybe a little more. And there were some older kids at the same table that started saying, "You know what homo means?" And they were explaining to each other in nasty terms what homo was. And she said that suddenly she realized that she was one of those despicable people, because she had these awful loves for the other girls. And she put a wall around herself that day. She was brought up in the church, and she put the church wall around her too. And she kept it that way for years and years. This is the pain that we bear, that we didn't know what hell she was going through as a teenager. It comes to various young people in various different ways, but the pain is awful. This is when the suicide rate is very high. 30 to 50% of teenage suicides are gays or lesbians. And of course, a lot of them are done with no explanation, so you don't know. Nearly all the gays and lesbians that we work with, I would say a vast majority of them anyway, and we have said, when you were growing up, or when you sort of went through your trying period of discovering you were gay, did you consider suicide? And the answer is yes, yes, yes. Some of them even made sort of weak attempts at it, you know, distress, calling for help, but they never would tell anyone what they needed. say it is a very, very difficult thing. In Seattle, there is a big youth group for gay kids. In Spokane, we now have one. I would recommend any place you live, if you hear about someone who can work with gay teenagers, do. The one in Spokane I know the most about. They meet once a week. They go to pizza parties. They go bowling. They go to the movies. They go ice skating. They play ping pong. I mean, they just do things together the way kids do things together. And they occasionally, from time to time, talk about themselves comfortably. Not all of them in that middle teenage range will turn out to be homosexual. They may not be. They may be still, you know, going through a crush situation, which many of us have done. But at least they're comfortable thinking about that even. They can move beyond it and become whoever they are, whatever they are. One of the things our daughter did was very, very common. She was a girl. She decided when she was 13 she was going to go into a convent. And after she'd finished high school and college, which her father insisted, she went into a convent, which is where she discovered all the lesbians in the world. and a few non-lesbians. But, you know, the clergy, the ministry in all churches is full of gays. And I've quizzed a lot of clergy in various churches about this, male and female. And I think part of it is because they're sensitive, because they've been wounded a lot, and they're sensitive and they're caring. With Pam, she still has problems with her knees. She was so super pious when she was a teenager. She spent hours on the rock stone in the chapels praying to God to cure her. And she still, and she's 50 years old, she still has knee trouble from that one thing. But I think that they reach for God to try and heal them or fix them or explain who they are, and they develop a closeness to God. I don't know whether others would like to comment on that, but I've talked to a number of different clergy in different denominations to come up with the same thing. The other thing is that they turn up, because they're caring people, they turn up in a lot of the social services. Social workers, all kinds of social nurses are gay, and they have a loving, caring, gentle manner about them, many of them. Our daughter now has a doctorate in theology. She is not ordained. She doesn't want to be. Her partner, however, is obviously a woman and is an ordained Episcopal priest. So you see, it's okay, I think, to ordain gay people and gay, both male and female. Let me see what else I had to tell you.
I'm wondering if anybody in the room would react to that statement.
Would be what?
It'd be interesting for me to hear what other people think about that, about ordaining gay and lesbian people.
I would love to hear some comments on that. I would love it if anyone who is gay in the room would like to talk to us, because that always makes it more real. But that is... when do I close?
Now?
7:15. Oh, goody.
My reaction is that it helps to have a member of the ordained ministry match what I am as a layperson. When all pastors in my denomination were men, they were loving and the message of God came through. But there was a special revelation or special joy when women mm-hmm. became ordained in my denomination. Because as a woman, I could feel a constriction mm-hmm. had been lost, or a freedom had been won, or there was some recognition that who I am could choose the ordained ministry. I would think that would be a similar or a parallel situation for gay men and women, that an ordained gay pastor mm-hmm. Could minister to homosexual and heterosexual people alike of all ages, mm-hmm. but that lay people who are gay would find that to be in a special connection.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anybody else have something they would like to add to that, or?
Maybe it would even bring a newer perspective on the heterosexual population of the church.
I'm sorry, I can't hear.
Even if the pastor were openly homosexual, that it would bring a better and newer perspective on faith, and even just a wider perspective on faith and how to serve others through that person. It would just open up a whole lot of possibilities.
Yeah. It opens up love to a wider, because love between people is what holds us all together. It makes that community. It makes caring between people. And if we take one kind of love and say it doesn't count, how can we do that? Mm-hmm. That is a very real love. That love is so dramatically illustrated in these last 10 years, as you have all seen or read about the care that one gay man will give for a partner who is dying of AIDS. Mm-hmm. It is just unbelievable. You don't have to be dying of AIDS before you see that love. I see it all the time with our gay friends.
I have a question over here. I very much agree. I've been working in social services and ministry for 5 or 6 years, and definitely agree with your observation about the number of gays and lesbians in those areas. And I wonder, were you saying, did you think it was because of the pain that they went through in their lives that they're more able to help other people, and so they've chosen the caring professions, or because of some more, you know, some reason just because of their orientation?
That's a very good question. I really don't know which it is. It may be a mixture of both, because you know, I know lots of gay people who are loving, caring, and wonderful, but they're not in any of those professions. And I don't know that they were made that way. I also know some really bullheaded lesbians, too, that aren't loving and caring. So it doesn't go with the story.
I have one more comment on ordination of gay people. I personally, I don't know how I feel about them. But in my denomination, which is not Lutheran, one of our churches just broke off and has ordained homosexual people now. And the strife is enormous, so you have to be ready for that, because it will be just really interesting times of fighting and battles.
Well, let me tell you something. My daughter's partner is a lesbian, and she is an Episcopal priest. She was one of the what is known as the Philadelphia 11, the first Episcopal priests ever ordained historically. They did it sort of defiantly. They did it with a lot of bishops and all that. It was done illegally, illicit, but correct or something. Anyway, 20 years ago. Now, she has been closeted all these years. She was married to a Methodist minister. Their marriage fell apart through some abuse situation, and I don't know what all, there are two children involved. And she went on and has had churches in the Diocese of New Jersey, Newark, which is Bishop Spong. You probably, some of you have seen his books. She's been in that diocese, but even she did not even come out to him, who was writing books about gay men. She's been with my daughter now for about 6 years, I guess it is. She has moved and has a fairly sizable parish in Philadelphia. She is now highly respected in the church. She's given big diocesan jobs. She's highly respected in her congregation. So much so that her warden came out to her about 6 months ago as a lesbian. And Nancy said she didn't quite know how to deal with that. I mean, she was respected enough. So then, I know I'm telling tales out of school here, I probably shouldn't, but it illustrates the situation. Nancy's still been hiding, and I've been saying, Nancy, you can come out. They love you anyway. The Bishop of Pennsylvania appointed her the head of the Diocesan Task Force on Sexuality.
Your daughter?
No, her partner. My daughter is a layperson.
Okay.
Nancy woke up, you know. So she decided she would go down and have a talk with the bishop. And she did. And she told him she was a lesbian and that she was living in a committed relationship with another woman. And he was just dumbfounded and said he was absolutely stunned. He had never suspected it. Never occurred to him. But thank you very much for telling me. I that's fine. I'm glad I know. Now, let's get back to the work about this job I've just given you. In other words, what I'm saying is there's a lot more fear out there in all departments than really exists.
Not in my denomination. That's not what would happen.
I know. All right. It's in certain pockets. It's very, very strong. And it's been fostered by some people that just build it up.
Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying it's there. I don't want people to think it's always as easy.
That's right.
No,
it is not easy, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. But there are pockets where it's terrible. We get around some of these people that are promoting these initiatives.
That's
an attitude. But I think it's 9 years now we're talking to groups. It's 9 years we're going out and we're not getting bashed. My husband and I are our names and faces and telephone numbers are everywhere. Yes.
Yeah, could you address the hypocrisy that goes on with that in churches? We talked a little bit earlier about gay priests, ministers who are closeted, yet congregations know that what the situation is, but they, because they want to remain closeted, either remain completely silent or do things to make them look like they aren't. And how, you know, as a congregation, is it enabling behavior by silence?
It is very, I even know the congregation you're talking about, of course, so I know the details. It's a very sad situation, and there is a self homophobia that gay people have. They learn to hate themselves. Now, some priests live with that all of their lives. Some ministers. And I think that some of the fundamentalist ministers that are preaching these wild things on television are probably gays who hate themselves, and this is their way of scratching all the other gays who maybe are getting along better than they are. I don't know how to deal with that problem. It's not good. It's very damaging to a congregation when you have the minister, the pastor, is not himself being honest. And yet, the churches are full of pastors who are not being honest, because there's so many of them who are bisexual, who are perhaps gay. One of our very, very important top bishops came out last year, just after he retired. We're all mad at him. He didn't do it before he retired, with a wife and umpteen children. And he's led a secret life all of his life.
What church? What church?
Episcopal.
I want to make a statement in just a minute.
Yes.
But I want to ask you a question. What is your documentation when you say there's a very large number of pastors, ministers, who are gay? I'm not challenging it.
I can't document that. That's a good challenge. I can't document it. I know a lot of them who are gay. I know a lot of them, as I was saying to somebody the other day, I know a lot of pastors who told me about Holden Village and encouraged me to come this weekend. Who are gay, and they are Lutheran pastors. Now, I don't think they're playing games. I think they've been open. But and I know a lot of Episcopalians that are gay. A lot of them.
Documentation would be hard to find because of the threats.
Because of the threat, they lose their job. Exactly. My son-in-law got ordained to the Episcopal priesthood in Pennsylvania. And at his ordination, people came from all over the place. There were over 30 Episcopal priests there. And when I looked at this crowd, I thought, I think a lot of those are gay. Well, that night after the service, there was a party up in his apartment, and they were all up there. And a lot of them had their partners with them, and they were all gay. Now, there were 30 Episcopal priests in one church. My husband was there, and except for the bishop and my husband, they were the only straight priests, I think, in that church. So it's a matter of I can't put names on those people.
That sounds like the stereotype that you can tell one by looking, and I don't think that's what you meant.
No. This in this case, I didn't have to tell one by looking. I was introduced to them with their partners, and with a lot of other information that went with it, so that they were identified as gay. So I was not. This was not a judgment call.
I have a question. You said when your daughter went to the convent that she found many lesbian women, and this conversely then. Many men that go into the priesthood are homosexual?
Well, many, yes.
Many. And I was just curious, with the rampantness of children being abused by priests, if there's any connection
No, I think
with that.
I think the big child abuse by priests is in the Roman Catholic Church,
right,
where we've got the celibacy problem. And they are not only celibates, but they have no recourse to any sexual outlet. I hate to get into this, but that's so they find the easiest thing available, which is children.
But when I was speaking specifically of Roman Catholic priests. You were saying that your daughter went to...
She was in an Episcopal convent. Our church has several religious orders, both male and female. No, she was not Roman Catholic.
Would you talk a little bit about the situation of the young people in the military who discover they may be enlisted 17 or 18 and then discover a few years later that they are homosexuals? When I watched those Senate hearings, it was so sad. I could hardly bear to watch.
I really wish that my husband were here to talk to you. Charlie was a graduate of the Naval Academy, served 24 years as a naval officer on active duty, and he feels so upset about this whole military thing, he can't believe it. He was the first person ever to testify before a congressional committee on the subject of gays in the military, which was several years ago. And he's gone back and lobbied several times for no good results. But it's just absolutely stupid. There's nothing else. It's just stupid. I was doing a class in Coeur d'Alene at North Idaho College, and some young man in there got up and said, well, he'd been in the service, and the thought of some gay guy being in the shower next to him was more than he could bear. And all we could say was that he probably was. And he didn't attack you. It's a male assumption. They take a male's, certain aggressive sexual males lay that mood onto homosexuals and assume that they're going to come at him. A male homosexual is very timid of approaching someone. They want to figure out if it's safe before they're going to do anything, to say a word.
Well, also, my understanding is we're the only westernized culture who does not allow gays in the military.
We have tens of thousands of them in the military, but yes. It's not legal.
But I mean, legally doesn't allow them.
I don't know whether
Germany,
we're the only one.
In Germany,
but,
they do, and in most of the European countries,
yes, I think they do.
But I think we're the only one.
You know, even Canada does now.
I think England did change.
England is really,
what I heard,
it's really weird on the subject of gays, but yes, I think they allow them, but I think the English schoolboy system contributes
to that.
It's
so ridiculous, the arguments that come up with us.
I want to say one thing before, then we can keep on talking, but I just want to read this. About gays and lesbians. These are, I'm tied up here like everything. These are your children and mine, our sisters, brothers, aunts, uncles, yes, even parents or grandparents. We are all God's children together. And if you can figure out the mysteries of God in this surroundings or why there are gay and lesbians, you tell me. But I think it's the way God made them. You want to add something?
It seems to me that as church community that we have a very special challenge, because a lot of the justification for gay bashing or discrimination comes out of our own traditions. And comes out of our use of the book, of the Bible. And so one of our challenges is to take another look at Scripture so as to understand the kind of cultural effects that have gone into a translation of basic Hebrew and Aramaic and Greek texts, and understanding that the kinds of interpretations that we have put on some of the old stories, you know, like Sodom and Gomorrah and Paul and Romans, that's not the only way to look at those, and that our faith has a lot to say there. And this analysis here on a simple justice, there's a page on biblical things.
I want to simply lay before you very briefly, if you're impatient with church administrators, bishops, superintendents, whatever you want to call them. Our own church body, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, is in the process of handling a sexual statement, dealing with it. It was not handled well at the outset, that's another matter, in the way it's put out to the public. That's, never mind that. But they're facing, and the statement talks about committed relationships. I would guess that in across the board, in most of our mainline congregations at least, you're going to find an opposition to acceptance of homosexuality and so on. And where I think I see most of our leadership at this point, and I've had the privilege of serving in that kind of a post, is typical of where my church stands at the moment. We're caught between the whole attitude out there, which needs an awful lot of education, and moving too fast, and what our stance is at this point, and I think you might understand our Bible school, or our teacher this morning, in the Bible study, because I would assume that her church is the same. The stance of most of the leadership is they will accept, will accept a homosexual into ministry if they do not practice. And practice, and then you're off. And that's just to let you know where it is at this point. I think we're going to move some of my spouse, but to know where it is and have some memory. Have some pity for those of who have church points of leadership. We're working on kind of a hard line. That's all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, somebody
here. I was wondering if you thought that practicing heterosexual should be admitted to the ministry.
I wonder about that too.
Well,
if you don't practice enough, do you get not better?
The thing I was wondering was what I know what people normally mean by saying practicing homosexual, but does that mean if I'm divorced or I'm widowed and there's never a man in my life again, I'm now a non-practicing heterosexual? I mean, we're playing word games, and I know that, but I get so frustrated. I've run into a lot of people who have come out of the closet and been thrown out of their entire families. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody, aunts and uncles, nobody will talk to them. I've also run into a whole lot of people who were homophobic, who when they found out that this person that they've been interacting with for months, years, weeks, whatever, was gay, it suddenly put a whole new face on it. It put a face on homosexuality. Mm-hmm. This them out there, the scary people who are going to go after your children is the person who helped you in the hospital. It's your next door neighbor.
You
may have a question.
Yes.
You said